In this case, Justice Stacy is recused and the court will be joined by Judge Martinez, District Court Judge from Sarpy County. Judge Martinez has now joined us. And welcome, Judge Martinez.
Thank you.
Ms. Pohl, good morning to you. Before we proceed, we need to check on WebEx. Is it Mr. Hawker?
Mr. Hawker Benke, Your Honor.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes, Mr. Hawker Benke.
No worries.
And you are on WebEx. Do we have anybody else on WebEx? No. So, do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
Only if you guys can hear me okay, Your Honor.
That is very good. And Mr. Hawker, thank you. Please do not refer to us as you guys. And with those basic rules going forward, Ms. Pohl, you may approach and you may proceed.
Morning, may it please the court. My name is Bryn Holston Pohl on behalf of appellant James Spratt. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. This is an appeal from a workers' compensation decision with several assignments of error. And while it's easy to get bogged down by the details in this appeal, first I would ask the court to keep an eye on the big picture of this case and remember that Mr. Spratt had a stipulated work accident and a stipulated injury. His accident occurred in November 2016, which is over 5 years ago. During that time, his injury has not changed. It's just the name or the label of the diagnosis by his providers that has changed. James is only 33 years old. And this is the prime of his life, and his symptoms have remained. He continues to suffer. He does not have any means to seek medical care, and he's unable to return to gainful and suitable employment. His only remedy was under the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Act.
So are you saying that lumbar and thoracic make no difference?
I'm saying that that's the description of his injury. He has always maintained, my injury is right here. He is not a doctor, and he does not know what the specific diagnosis is. He can simply explain to his providers, and in this case, to the court and counsel, where his symptoms are. He must rely on the expertise of the providers to make the diagnosis.
I beg your pardon. So is there some evidence in the record that a non-medical professional that pain may present someplace and it may be referred from a different location where the injury actually exists?
Is there evidence from a non-medical professional in the record? Is that the question?
Is there evidence from anybody to the effect that pain can present in a location, but that where it presents is not always where the injury actually exists?
Yes, we would cite to, I believe it's Exhibit 55, Dr. Gilmore's updated opinion, where he says that pain can be essentially referred, radiated, and that's what he assumed was going on in this case, was that most commonly the types of symptoms that Mr. Spratt was having originate from the lumbar spine, and he needed to treat that. And once he did treat it, he was then able to parse out the fact that, you know, it's not originating from there. Rather, while that's the most common explanation, I believe it is originating from the thoracic spine and radiating. Now, Mr. Spratt has maintained, my injury is right here. He can only tell the providers that. He is not an expert. The court is not an expert in medical diagnoses, nor is counsel. Mr. Spratt here has done nothing wrong, and he is stuck in this situation where he's a victim of his own circumstances. It's our position that the Supreme Court has the ability to reach its own conclusions on questions of law, and these questions are going to involve whether 48 162.01 sub 7 grant statutory authority to relook at this change, whether the preclusion.
What changed with the statute and what does that do for you?
Well, for 48, shall we refer to it as 162 for brevity? The last sentence of that statute says is the compensation court or judge thereof may also modify a previous finding, order, award, or judgment relating to physical, medical, or vocational rehabilitation services as necessary in order to accomplish the goal of restoring the injured worker to gainful and suitable employment or as otherwise required in the interest of justice. It's our position as a statutorily created court that this statute grants the trial court the authority to look at these changes in the condition. The change being the expert's opinion, not necessarily the injury itself. It allows the court to have authority statutorily to go back and look at that and enter a further award expounding on the original award. It's not
where in the record would I find that the application of 48162.01 sub 7 was raised before the workers' compensation court judge?
You would not find it there, and we admit that. It was not brought because we did not know that the court was going to find it didn't have the statutory authority to address this. So on appeal is the first chance that we have brought this argument, and we admit to that. We also, to quash any additional argument, would admit that this isn't a 48-141 modification case, and this isn't a compensable consequence type of situation. This is a unique set of facts. It's not something that's going to come up a whole bunch, but it matters a whole bunch to Mr. Spratt. So it's our position there that the court, A, when he found that he did not have authority to even look at this issue under Doherty. Well, Doherty was a case in which the court found, hey, we cannot modify a vocational plan because the services essentially are different than what the court found at the original hearing. Now, after that came out, the legislature specifically modified 162.01 to address that. And when it was modified, it was presented initially to just say they can modify a previous award relating to vocational rehabilitation services. But the legislative intent, if you're looking at that, they added physical and medical, those two terms, to that language also.
Is there any difference between physical and medical in the context of this case?
I don't know the answer to that.
I know they use physical, medical, or vocational,
right,
with the Oxford comma, but you've already referred to legislative history. Aren't physical and medical, weren't they considered essentially synonymous?
I would say they're synonymous. I do not know why the legislature decided to include those two types. Could potentially be looking at the physical, possibly under some indemnity. I'm not certain. I don't know the answer to what their language there was, but I would say that the plain intent of the language is to allow the court statutory authority to address a situation such as this where there is a change in an expert's opinion.
I know your time is dwindling, and yes, I'm sensitive to that, and I know you want to talk about the finality issue. But I also want to talk about the arguments that are asserted with respect to mistake. The word mistake doesn't appear in 42 or 48.162.01 sub 7 at all. Is that sentence of the statute upon which you rely broader, less broad, or the same as statutes in other jurisdictions where mistake has been applied?
Where it has been applied, I would say it's the same, and they just read it into that. In this situation, I concede that we have no statutory language specifically addressing mistake. There are some jurisdictions that do require that the statutory language be included, but there are others that do not. I would argue that under the law of the case, and which would specifically apply here, and the interest of justice, the court needs to read in a mistaken diagnosis exception for these types of cases. This isn't going to open the floodgates because the.
Is it really a mistake?
It's not necessarily a mistake. It's an evolving diagnosis. Mr. Spratt did nothing wrong. The trial court did nothing wrong. The doctor did nothing wrong. Mr. Spratt had to seek a trial at the time he did. He didn't have the luxury of parsing out every single possible diagnosis that could be there. He had to trust the doctors that he had and had to seek a trial at the time that he did. It's not necessarily a mistake, but it is a material change that the key witness made. Based on that, we think it's clear that the reading of the law under 48-160-201 should allow for the court to make this jurisdiction to make this type of change, as well as the fact that this is not precluded under the law of the case doctrines. I see I'm dwindling. And we would also ask that a mistaken or evolving diagnosis exception be adopted. I see I do not have any further time here. Any additional questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hawker, thank you. You may proceed.
I think you're muted.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning.
Thank you. You may proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices, may please the court. My name is Micah Charles Hawker Banky, and I'm here today with my co-counsel, Paul Barta, representing the interests of Crete Carrier in today's case, who is the appellee. I first want to thank the court for allowing me to appear remotely due to my inadvertent exposure to COVID last week. It is always better to be safe than sorry. I ask this court to affirm the court below for three reasons. First, the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court does not have the power under section 162.017 to award new benefits and services. Two, the law of the case doctrine in this case does not allow the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court to award benefits and services that were expressly denied in the prior award. And three, even if this court were to adopt a mistaken medical diagnosis exception as appellant requests, the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court below was not wrong to find that such an exception would not apply to the facts of this case. Regarding the first issue, section 162.017 was enacted to allow specific mistakes to be corrected. The legislature actually enacted that provision in response to Daugherty v. Swift Eckridge. In that case, a vocational rehabilitation counselor at the time of the original trial thought that an employee was going to a school that was on a quarter system when in fact he was on a semester system. Now, this meant that not enough services or benefits were awarded for that employee to complete his schooling. Unfortunately, by the time the mistake was discovered, it was only after the award had been entered. Unfortunately, at the time, the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court did not have the power to go back and correct this mistake. The legislature wanted the compensation court to have the power to correct mistakes in the benefits and services it had already awarded. This provision does not allow the Workers' Compensation Court to award benefits and services that were never awarded, like in this case. The court below found Mr. Spratt previously claimed entitlement for benefits and services for a thoracic back injury at the time of the original trial. At the time of the original trial, Mr. Spratt was found to have a thoracic back injury, but that injury was found to have only been temporary, meaning that it did not require any benefits or services at the time of the original trial. Now, Mr. Spratt is once again asking this court to award benefits and services for a thoracic back injury. Now, section 162.017 does not give the compensation court the power to award these benefits and services that were never awarded in the first place. Regarding the second issue, the law of the case doctrine, The law of the case doctrine stands for the proposition that an issue fully litigated at one stage of the proceedings should not be relitigated later on. Now, technically, the court below referred to this as issue preclusion, although given the overlapping interests between these two doctrines, it is probably understandable. Issue preclusion, sometimes called collateral estoppel, really refers to two different suits with one of the same parties, but that party had a full and fair opportunity to be heard on a previous issue, so that issue should not be relitigated. Now, this is different from claim preclusion, where you have two different suits, but between the exact same parties, and it's held that the claims that should have been brought in the first suit really should not be brought in a second suit. Now, this is both these doctrines are different than the law of the case doctrine, which involves the exact same case and the exact same parties, but just different stages of the same suit. Now, normally this doctrine applies in greatest force on appeal to a higher court, but it does apply in certain cases in the Nebraska Workers' Compensation Court because of the unique structure of that system. Now, the court below found that Mr. Spratt had litigated the issue of a thoracic back injury in the prior proceeding. Appellant concedes that nothing in Mr. Spratt's condition has changed from that prior proceeding. Appellant had a full and fair opportunity to be heard about the need for ongoing benefits and services for a thoracic back injury at the time of the original trial. The court found that ongoing benefits and services were not warranted at that point in time. Under the law of the case doctrine, appellant is stopped from relitigating that same issue over again. Now, there are exceptions to the law of the case doctrine, but none of those exceptions would actually apply to this particular situation. Well, that's because, first exception, considerations of substantial justice do not warrant reconsideration of this issue. In fact, the court below found that substantial justice warranted the exact opposite because there were other doctors besides Dr. Gilmore that were considered. The second exception, that a later appeal from a higher court has resulted in a contrary opinion, that has not been contended in this case, it would not be applicable. The third is that there are materially and substantially different facts. That's not present in this case. At the time of the original trial, Mr. Spratt, appellant, argued that there was both a thoracic back injury and a lumbar injury. Now, appellant is coming back and arguing the exact same thing, that there is also a thoracic back injury that needs benefits and services.
I beg your pardon. Under the statutes, is there an opportunity to bring to the court's attention medical information if, for example, diagnostic tools improve? And what I'll just say for purposes of the question, a more accurate diagnosis becomes possible due to the evolution of diagnostic tools.
Yes, Your Honor, that would actually theoretically be possible to bring under a modification standard. Now, that's section 48-141. Unfortunately, that actually has its own standard and burdens of proof to go into it. Now, appellant has been very clear that they are not claiming that this motion is filed under 48-141. Now, that would require both proving a change in condition and a change in capacity. So both a change in, say, the medical diagnosis and also a change in the employee's earning capacity to be heard. Turning now to the third point, which is regards to the mistaken medical diagnosis. Now, the idea behind the mistaken medical diagnosis exception in other jurisdictions is that if a doctor makes a mistake in diagnosing an injured worker is not barred from traditional estoppel principles and interests of finality and can relitigate that issue in a later proceeding. Now, the Larson Treatise, which summarizes a lot of these other jurisdictions, talks about how usually the expert that is changing their opinion needs to be a key expert that the prior court relied upon, meaning that it was that particular expert's opinion that led the court to make that prior decision. Now, even if this court were to adopt this exception to finality, the court below was not wrong to find that such an exception would not apply to the facts of this case. At the original hearing, appellant argued that Mr. Spratt had two permanent thoracic back injuries, a disc protrusion and a back strain. At the time of that hearing, Dr. Gilmore opined that Mr. Spratt had both a thoracic disc bulge and a thoracic strain. The compensation court found that Mr. Spratt did not have a thoracic disc bulge, those related to the work accident, but did have a thoracic strain, but that strain was not permanent and did not require ongoing benefits and services. Appellant is now arguing that Dr. Gilmore believes that the true cause of the lumbar back pain is in the thoracic back. Even if this could be classified as a mistake, the compensation court was not clearly wrong to find that Dr. Gilmore was not a key expert witness in its prior determination. As a factual matter, the compensation court found that it relied upon the opinions of both Dr. Gilmore and Dr. Donahue to find that the thoracic back strain was not a permanent injury and it completely healed at the time of the original award. Dr. Gilmore was not the key expert. I also want to briefly address the question that was raised to opposing counsel about mistake needing to appear in the statute. Now, in several other states that have a mistake as a basis to reopen an issue like the one perhaps with other mistaken medical diagnoses, in those states, the statutory provisions usually use the word mistake, but it's not necessarily always that case. Again, though, with those other states and jurisdictions that recognize an exception or a mistaken medical diagnosis, those states usually have some sort of statutory basis for that exception, which has not been claimed in this case. It's for all of these reasons that Appelli asked the court.
Mr. Hawker, Banky, what do you think the legislature meant when they amended 48-162.01 sub 7?
They meant for mistakes like vocation rehabilitation counselors, where they made a mistake about the benefits and services that needed to be awarded, for those types of things to be changed. That's not the same situation we have here. We have a case where benefits and services were specifically sought, and those benefits and services were denied and never awarded. Now, you're not talking about augmenting prior benefits and services. You're talking about awarding new benefits and services. In fact, when this issue came up at the Court of Appeal,
really talking about somebody whose pain and whose problem was not handled by the medical treatment he's had so far, and it continues to persist.
Mr. Chief Justice, I see that I am out of time. May I be allowed to answer the question and briefly conclude?
We may.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. This case is a little bit different, Your Honor. At the time of the original trial, Dr. Gilmore and Mr. Spratt were both talking about thoracic and lumbar back pain. Dr. Gilmore, the expert who's changed his mind now, thought that there was a thoracic back injury that required ongoing benefits and services to treat that was related to the work accident. Now, Dr. Gilmore is saying that after fully treating the lumbar back injury, the true cause of the pain is in the thoracic. Well, Dr. Gilmore at the time of the original trial thought that there was a thoracic back injury. Dr. Gilmore now thinks that there is a thoracic back injury. Nothing has really changed in Dr. Gilmore's opinion, although he does tend to change his opinion from time to time. Now, it's for all of these reasons that Appelli asked this court to affirm the court below. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for a rebuttal? We do not. That concludes arguments then in Spratt versus Creek Carrier Corporation. Counsel, thank you for appearing. Mr. Hawker, thank you for appearing by WebEx. Ms. Pohl, thank you for coming today to the court. Counsel, you are excused, and the court is adjourned.